Cry from a Far Planet, Todd Godwin. A smile of friendship is burying of teeth, so is a snarl of menace. It can be fatal to mistake the latter for the former. Harming an alien being only under circumstances of self-defence. Trust no alien being under any circumstances, from its exploration ship's handbook. This in the science exploration ship's control room. He heard nothing, but that was what bothered him. Almost quiet, when there should have been a multitude of sounds from the nearby village of the view screens, audio pickups to transmit. It was more than 6 hours past the time when the native Froon should have come to sit with him outside the ship as he resumed a laborious attempt to learn each other's language. The view screen was black in the light of the control room. Even though it was high noon outside, the dull red sun was always invisible for the world's thick atmosphere. To human eyes, full day was no more a red-tinged darkness. He switched on the ship's outside floodlights and the view screen came to bright white life, showing the empty glades reaching away towards groves of purple alien trees. He noticed absolutely trees seemed to have changed a little in colour since his arrival. The village is hidden from view by the outer trees, but there should have been some activity in the broad area visible to him. There's none, but even along the distant segment of what should have been a busy road, natives were up to something. He knew from hard experience on another alien worlds it would be nothing good. It would be another misunderstanding of some kind. He didn't know enough the incomprehensible language to ask them what it was. Suddenly, as it always came, he felt someone or something standing close behind him, peering over his shoulder. He dropped his hand to the blaster he had taken to wearing at all times and whirled. Nothing was behind him, there never was. Control room was empty, with no hiding place for anything. Door was closed, locked by the remote control button beside him. There was nothing. Station of being watched faded, as though the watcher had withdrawn to a greater distance. Perhaps a hundredth time within 6 days he felt the sensation. When he slept at night, something came to muzzle at his mind, faceless, formless, utterly alien. For the past 3 nights he had not let the blaster get beyond quick reach of his hand, even when in bed. But whatever it was, it could not be on the ship. He searched the ship twice, a methodical compartment by compartment search. Found nothing. Had to be the work of natives from outside the ship, except why, if the natives were telepathic, did the one called Froon go through the very pretense of trying to learn mutually understandable new form of communication? There's one other explanation which he could not accept. He was following the footsteps of Will Garrett of Ship 9, who had deliberately gone into the White Sun 2 months after the death of his twin brother. Looked at a chair beside his own, Johnny's chair, which would forever be empty. His thoughts went back down to the old bitter paths, exploration board. Being wrong, when he thought the close bond between identical twins would ever make them an ideal two-man crews for their lonely, lifetime journeys of the exploration ships. And the twins were too close. When one of them died, the other died in part with him. They crossed a thousand light years of space together. He and Johnny, when they came to the bleak planet, he would name Johnny's world. He should never have let Johnny go alone up a slope of the honeycomb mountain. Johnny had wanted to take the routine record photographs of black tiger-like beasts, which they called cave cats, and the things had seemed harmless and shy despite their ferocious appearance. I'd taken them a sack of food. I think they might like, Johnny said. I might want to try to get some close-ups of shots of them. 10 minutes later, he heard a distant snarl of Johnny's blaster. He ran to the mountainside, knowing already. It was too late. He found two of the cave cats lying where Johnny had killed them. He found Johnny at the foot of the cliff, high cliff. He was dead, his neck broken by the fall. Scattered around him from the torn sack was the food he wanted to give to the cats. Buried Johnny the next day while a cold wind moaned under a lead grey sky. He built a monument for him, a little mound of frosty stones that only the wild animals would ever see. The chime rang high and clear, and the memories are shattered. Orange light with a hyperspace communicator was flashing. The signal meant exploration board were calling him from Earth. Switched the switch and said, "Paul Jameson, exploration ship one." Phineas voice of Brenda spoke. "It's been some time since your primary report. Is everything all right?" The way he answered, "I was going to give you the detailed report tomorrow. Give me a brief sketch of it now, except for the short brown fur. Natives are humanoid in appearance. There are basic differences. The body temperature is cool, like their climate. The vision range is just within the visible red on the infrared. They shade their eyes from the light of anything as hot as boiling water. They look square into the ship's headlights and never see them." "And their knowledge of science?" Brenda asked. "They have a good understanding of it, but little long lines entirely different from what our own were at their state of development. For example, these powdered machines with chemicals. There's no steam, heat or exhaustion." "And what do we want?" "That's what we want to find. Worlds where branches of research unknown to our science are being explored. How about their language?" "No progress with it yet," as he told Brenda of the silence in the village, and added, "Even if Froon should show up, would not ask him what was wrong. I learned a few words, but there are so many different definitions, I can't use them." "I know," Brenda said. "Variable and unrelated to definitions, then detectables, shades of inflection, and sometimes a language that has no distinct, certainly single, separate words. Singer brothers of ship 8 ran into the latter. You give them up, gave them up to be as lost." "The singer's dead," he exclaimed. "Good God, it's only been a month since the Raymond brothers were killed." "Thanks, it says it's familiar," Brenda said. "They always are. There's no way the expedition men can tell the natives that they mean no harm. And the suspicion native grows to dangerous hostility. The singers report the natives on the world to be both suspicious and possessing powerful weapons. Things are proceeding warily, their own weapons away, always at hand. But somehow the natives caught them off guard. Russ's result was 4 months ago." And suddenly Brenda added, "The ship was the 9th, and we had only 15. They didn't reply to the implication of Brenda's statement. It was obvious to them all what the end of the plan would be. It had to be. It had been only 3 years since the 15 heavily armed expedition ships set out to lead the way for Turian expansion across the galaxy. There was a cry from far planets. Find all the worlds that held intelligent life. That's the ultimate goal of the plan. To accumulate and correlate all the device knowledge of all the intelligent life forms in the galaxy. Among achievements resulting from the tremendous mass of data, where ships drive faster than even in hyperspace, third level drive would bring all the galaxies of the universe within reach. Now 9 ships have gone out of 15, 19 men out of 30. Communication barrier, Brenda said, the demand communication barrier, been the cause behind the loss of every ship. There's nothing we can do about it. We've stumped away it. Conversation was terminated slowly afterwards, and he moved about the room restlessly, which is time to lift the ship again. And Johnny, not there in the dark world, was like a smothering tomb. He would like to leave it behind and drive again into the star clouds of the galaxy, drive on and on into them. A ghostly echo touched his mind, restless, potently yearning. He swung to face the locked door, knowing he could be nothing behind it. The first real fear came to him as he did so. Thing was lonely. Thing that watched him was as lonely as he was. What else could any of it be but a product of a mind in the first stage of sanity? Natives came 10 minutes later. View screens showed their chemical-powered vehicle emerged from trees and rolled swiftly across the glade. 4 natives were in it, while a 5th one lay on the floor, apparently badly injured. The vehicle stopped a short distance in front of the airlock. He recognised the native on the floor. It was Froon, the one of whom He'd been exchanging language lessons. They're waiting for him when he emerged from the ship, pistol light weapons in their belts and grim accusation in their manner. Foom is muttering intelligible unconscious. Skin were not hair were not covered by brown fur. It was a normal appearance. He was dying. Leader four indicates Foon said in a quick, brittle voice, Ku, Carrara, Finn, Lorne Drain. Only one word was familiar, Ku, which meant you and yesterday, and meant a great many other things. The question was utterly meaningless to him. He dropped his hand a little near his blaster. Leader spoke again, a quick set of unknown words, ended with a harsh, demanding, Kitten. Because it meant now, or very quickly. All the other words were unfamiliar to him. He waited a grim menace without them increasing what he did when he did not answer. He tried in vain to find some way of explaining to them. He was not responsible for Foon's sickness and could not cure it. Then he saw the spray of leaves that had caught on the corner of the vehicle. They came through the fire of the trees. They were a deeper purple colour. All the trees around the ship were almost grey by contrast. Whence that he was responsible for Foon's condition. The cold white light to the ship's floodlights under which he had Foon had set for day after day contained variations and went through the violet and far into the ultraviolet to the animal and the vegetable life of the dark world. Such radiations were invisible, short and deadly. Jean Foon was dying of hard radiation sickness, something he should have foreseen and avoided. That would have not happened had he accepted old Foon's premised invitation, beginning to go with him to the village to work at a language study. There he would have used a harmless battery light lamp for illumination. There was no certainty that natives would not plan to lay a trap for him in a village. He had not refused to go. It did not matter that there was a complex radiation neutralizer, a cell reconstruction ship, which could return Foon to full normal health. A few hours after he was placed in its chamber, he turned to the leader of the four natives and motioned from Foon to the airlock. Go there, he said in native language. Bron, the leader answered. The word no meant no. There was a determination in the way he said it. He showed he would not move from it. End of 5 minutes, his attempts to persuade them take Foon to the ship increased their suspicion of his motives to the point critical danger. If only he could tell them why he wanted Froome back and taken into the ship. Could not and would have to take Froome by first disposing of the four without injuring them. This he could do by procuring one of the paralysing needle guns from the ship. He took a step towards the ship and spoke the words that to the best of his knowledge, meant I come back. Fusmin kit kida kit kala. Ply was a snatch at their weapons in desperate haste. The leader uttered a hoarse word of command. He put a blaster from his pick, blaster from his with the quick motion of long training he had perfected, and their weapons were only half drawn when his warning came. Bron. They froze, but they did not release their weapons. He walked backwards to the airlock, blaster covering them, sensibly waiting manner. In which they watched his progress, telling him that the slightest relation of his vigilance would meant his death. He did not let the muzzle of the blaster waver until he was inside the airlock and the outer door had slid shut. He was sure that the natives would be gone when he returned. He was sure of another thing. However he had said to them, it was not what he thought he was saying. He saw the glen was empty, but he opened the airlock again. At the same time, a bomb-like missile struck the ship just above the airlock, exploded with a savage crash. He jabbed a close button, and the door clicked shut barely in advance of three more missiles, which hammered at the impervious armour. So that, he thought wearily, is that. Laid the useless needle gun aside, the stage had passed when he could hope to use it. He could save Froon only by killing some of the others, or he could lift the ship and leave Froon to die. Either action would make the natives hate and fear for Terrans. Hatred and fear that would be there to greet all future Terran ships. That was not the way a race gave birth to a peaceful galactic empire. It was not the purpose behind the plan. But always, whatever the exploration went, encountered a deadly barrier, intangible, insalable communication barrier. where weapons of restoration men carried in the ship. His ship, he had power to destroy a world, but not the power to ask us simple questions would have prevent fatal misunderstandings. Before another 3 years had passed, the last exploration man would die and the last exploration ship would be lost. He felt the full force of hopelessness. The first time when Johnny had been alive, it would be different. Johnny had laughed whenever the outlook was the darkest and said, "We'll find a way, Paul." Thought broke as suddenly and spectrally he felt that Johnny was very near. The feeling came to soften close of a dreamlike place in which Johnny's death was vague and far away. Only something had happened in another dream. He knew without wondering why that Johnny was in the control room. A part of his mind tried to reject the thought of illusion. He did not listen. He did not want to listen. He ran out to ship's elevator, stumbling like that, like one not fully awake. Johnny was waiting for him in the control room, alive, alive. He spoke as he stepped into the control room. "Johnny?" Something moved a control board, black and alien. Something standing tall was a man, short high legs, yellow eyes blazed and a feline face. A cave cat, like the ones that killed Johnny. Realisation was wrenching shock and terribleness as an illusion. Johnny was not waiting for him, not alive. He pulled out the blaster, the dreamlike state gone. Pulled the cave cat, flashed out and struck the ship's master light switch, a movement faster than his own. Room was instantly totally dark. Fired a pale blue flare, lanced across the room, to reveal that the cat was gone. Fired again, quickly, immediately, in the front of him. Bell beam revealed only a ripped metal floor. I am not where you think. Words spoke clearly in his mind. There was no directional source. He held his breath, listening for the whisper of padded feet as the cave cat flashed in for the kill, made swift analysis of the situation. A cave cat was telepathic, highly intelligent, been on ship all the time. It and others had wanted the ship, had been killed Johnny to reduce opposition to the minimum. He himself had been permitted to live, so the cave cat learned from his mind how to operate most automatic controls. Now he served his purpose. "You are wrong." Again, there's no way he could determine the direction from which the fault came. He listened again and wondered why it had not waylaid him at the door. "His faults came. I had to let you see me, or you would have not. I had to let you see me, or you would not have believed I existed. There was only here I could extinguish all lights and have time to speak before you killed me. I let you think your brother was here." There was a little pause. "I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I should have used some other method of luring you here." Spangler said towards what seemed to be a faint sound near the Ostrogator unit across the room. "We did not intend to kill your brother. We did not believe it." He did not believe it and he did not reply. When he first made our first telepathic contact with him, he ejected his blast and fired. In mind was the conviction that we had pretended to be harmless animals so we could catch him off guard and kill him. One of us leaped at him as he fired a second time to knock the blaster from his hand. We needed only a few minutes in which to explain, but he would not trust us for that long. His misjudgment of distance and he was not off the cliff. Again he did not reply. "We don't intend to kill your brother." Thought came, "but you do not believe me." He spoke for the first time. "I do not believe you. You're physically like cats and cats don't misjudge distances. Now you might want something from me. For you try to kill me too? What is it?" "I have to tell you of my race for you to understand. We call ourselves a Varn. In so far as it can be translated to a very spoken word, we're a very old race. Beginning we did not live in caves, but were there came a long period of time for a thousand years. Climbing up loud was so violent we were forced to live in the caves. Pretty dark there, but our sense of smell became very acute. Together with significant sensitivity temperature changes, we could detect objects in our immediate vicinity. There were subterranean plants in the caves, and food was not a problem. Well, we'd been slightly telepathic. During our long stay in the caves, our intelligent telepathic powers became fully developed. We only thought we had only our minds. Physical science is not created in dark caves, clandy pools. Time finally came when we could leave the caves, but it was of little help to us. No resources of our own world but Earth a stone and the fern and grass of the plains. When about the universe, we knew the stars were distant suns, because of one of our own suns came a star each winter. Studied as best as we could, but we could see the stars only as little wild animals saw them. So much, there was so much we wanted to learn, and by then we were past our zenith and already dying out. Our environment was a prison from which we could not ever escape. When the ship arrived, we thought we might soon be free. We wanted to ask you to take some of us with you and arrange for the others of your race to stop by our world. But you dismissed us as animals, so useful only for making warm fur coats, because we lived in caves and had no science, no artifacts, nothing. You had a power to destroy us, and we did not know what your action would be when you learned we were intelligent and perfect. Every race must have a high code of ethics and never intrude on unwanted. But would you have believed that? Did not answer, death for your brother changed everything. We're going to leave so soon that there would be no time to learn about you. I hid on the ship so I could study you and wait until I could prove to you that what you needed me. But now I can, Frune is dying. I can give you the proper words of explanation. Call the others to bring him into the ship. Real purpose, what is it? He asked. I show you that the men need the Varn. We want to explore the galaxy and learn. So do the Varn. You have the ships and we have the telepathic abilities. We'll end the communication problem. Race and mine have proceeded only if we go together. So it's for a true and hidden purpose behind Varn's proposal. So he saw what it would have to be. A long-range goal. You failed to mention that. Your ultimate aim. I know what you're thinking. How can I prove you wrong now? There's no way for the Varn to prove him wrong, nor for him to prove the treachery behind Varn's proposal. Proof would come only when it's the time. The Terran Varn Corporation transformed Terrans into a slave race. Varn spoke again. You refuse to believe I am sincere? I'd be a naive fool to believe you. Be too soon to save Fulne unless you react very quickly. I have told you why I'm here. There's nothing more I can do to convince you. But be first to show trust. By switch on the lights, it will be within your power to kill me. Varn was gambling its life in game, which he would be gambling of planet race. The game he would end at the first sound of movement from the astrogator across the unit across the room. I have been here beside you all the time. Fairy Pob brushed his face. Claw flicked gently, but grimly remaining alongside his throat. He wailed and fired. It was too late. The Varn already leaped suddenly away. A beam found only the bare floor. And lights came on, glowing bright when we saw the Varn standing by a control board, his huge yellow eyes watching him. He brought the blast into line with its finger of firing stud. Waited, but not moving or shrinking from what was coming. Transcendent golden eyes looked at him and beyond him, as though they saw something not in the room. He wondered if it was in the contract with his own kind on Johnny's world, and telling him it had made the gamble with high stakes and lost. I was not afraid, not asking for mercy. The killing of it was suddenly an act without saviour. It's something he would do in an immediate future. But first he would let it live long enough to save Trune. He motioned to Blossom and said, lead the way to the airlock. Alfred, you will kill me? Lead the way, he pleaded harshly. It said no more, went obediently past him and trotted down the corridor like a great black dog. He stood in the open airlock, the Varn against the further wall where he had ordered it to stand. Fume is this radiation chamber. He's held in his first intelligible conversation with natives that day. Varn was facing in the red black gloom outside of a loaded red airlock. The party natives would be heard crossing the glade. Their thoughts no longer would fear the suspicion. Suspicion said, the sun is ended. Raised his muddled blaster in his hand. Black head lifted and the golden eyes looked up at him. I made you no promise, he said. I would demand none. Can't stop to take you back to your own world. I can't leave you alone on this one, live on this one. With what you've learned from my mind, you could. We'll have your native Bildervan, a disruptor, quick space fleet equal to our own ships. We only want to go with you. He told it he wanted to know before it killed it, wondering why he should care. I would like to believe you're sincere. You know why I don't dare to. Trusting a turbulent race would be too dangerous. Varn would know everything we know knew. Only the Varn would be able to communicate with each other, with each new alien race. We'd have to believe that what the Varn told us. We'd have to trust the Varn to see it for us and speak for us and not to deceive us. We went across the galaxy. And then, in the end, the Terrans would no longer be needed, except the subject race. They would be enslaved. We had to lay the groundwork of empire, the Varn Empire. Silence in which these words hung like something cold and invisible behind them, between them. Then Ivan asked him very quietly, why is the plan failing? You already know, he said, because of the barrier, the communication barrier that causes aliens to withstand tensions of explanation men and fear them. No communication barrier between you and I, yet you fear me and you're going to kill me. I have to kill you. You represent a danger to my race. Isn't that the same reason why the aliens kill exploration men? Didn't Lance and his thought came quickly. How does an exploration man appear to natives of alien worlds? How did he not appear? He landed on their world and ship, would smash it into oblivion, stepped out of his ship carrying weapons, a level city, representing the invisible power for destruction. He trusted no one and nothing. Eternally hoped to find welcome and friendship and cooperation. There, the Varn said, is your true barrier, your own distrust and superstition. You yourselves to create it, each a new world. Now you're going to erect it between my race and yours by killing me and advising the exploration board, quarantining my world, never let another ship land here. There. Again, there was silence. He thought what the Varn had said and what he said earlier. We are a very old race. There's wisdom in the Varn's analysis, the cause of plan's failure. With Ivan has vanquished the communication stalemate, a new approach would be tried. They could go a long way together, a man and Varn, a long way. Or they could create the Varn Empire. How could he know which it would be? How could anyone know, except the telepathic Varn? The muzzle blaster dropped, and he brought it back up. He forced the dangerous decision aside, knowing we'd have to kill Ivan at once, or it might weaken again, and said harshly to it, risk is too great, I want to believe you. But all the talk of the trust and great intentions, only talk, race would be the only one they had to trust. He touched the firing stud, a last thought of the Varn it came. Let me speak once more. He waited the firing stud cold, a metallic under his finger. You're wrong, we already set the example of faith in you by asking to go with you. I told you we did not intend to hurt your brother. I told you we saw the stars, only these little wild animals saw them. Years in the dark caves. You do not understand. Vazavan looked to the eyes beyond him, beautiful expressionless, like polished gold. The Varn were blind.